This morning we are in Hosea, hopefully chapter 4 through 6. We'll see how far we get, but I did want to back up just a little bit and go back to chapter 3 because when I was talking to Lyndon, I had forgotten that. You remember last week I was kind of discombobulated when I was doing it, but it says, "Then the Lord said to me, go ahead, love a woman who is loved by her husband, yet an adulteress, even as the Lord loves the sons of Israel, though they turn to other gods and love raisin cakes. So I bought her for myself for 15 shekels of silver and a homer and a half." So he had been asked to go back, repurchase his own wife from someone else. So whether she was a temple prostitute or whether she sold herself into slavery or whatever she had done, God said, forgive her what she's done and go back and buy her back. So he's going to buy back this adulterous wife who has been with other people over and over and over again. Wow. Do you see that parallel with us? God bought us back at a price. Yet we continually sin against Him over and over and over. We are that adulterous people. We are those people. We are the people who have been adulterers against God because God had married us and saved us and brought us into His own fold. And at this particular point, He redeems us back. So I just wanted to, put that in there because I had said He bought her back, but I didn't make that parallel between between God and Jesus and Him buying us back with Jesus' death on the cross. Now we're in chapter 4, and we switch from the first three chapters were all about Hosea and him finding a woman who was a prostitute and marrying her and going to make a good woman out of her, and yet she continues to be an adulteress. Now we're going to go to the part where God is talking to His people, both in Israel. Remember, He is in... why don't we open that door up a little bit? I see people fanning.
Sure.
Thanks.
Turn that fan on.
Turn the fan on too. Thank you. It's a little warm today.
Oh no.
He'll, that's all right. He just has to plug it in. So in this...
Comes that way.
It'll come to you before it'll come to you.
You went all the way over there and just part of the way.
Oh, that's just so we've got some air circulating. Chapter 4. Listen to the word of the Lord, O sons of Israel. For the Lord has a case against the inhabitants of the land. When He says He has a case against them, you're almost seeing God being the prosecutor. He's taking out a lawsuit against His people, because there is no faithfulness or kindness or knowledge of God in the land. There was swearing and deception, murder, stealing, and adultery. They employ violence so that bloodshed follows bloodshed. Therefore, the land mourned. That was just a chair falling. And I know y'all know that. I'm not gonna get into that. We'll continue. Verse 3, therefore the land mourns, and everyone who lives in it languishes along with the beasts of the field and the birds of the sky, and also the fish of the sea disappear. Yet let no one find fault, and let none offer reproof, for your people are like those who contend with the priest. I'm gonna stop right here for just a second. What you've got to be able to see is, I'm worried just like y'all are worried. He is having a lawsuit against his people. Hosea is actually prophesying from the northern kingdom. He's prophesying to the people of the north, which is going to be not Judah but Israel. And you're going to see down here he's going to change the name, the wording to Ephraim. And the reason he's using Ephraim as a word for Israel or for the northern kingdom is because Ephraim was the largest group within the northern kingdom. So you'll see him refer to them as Ephraim. Verse 5, so you will stumble by day, and the prophet also will stumble with you by night. And I will destroy your mother. My people are destroyed for the lack of knowledge. This is a really important part. And the prophet also will stumble with you by night. So they're stumbling during the day. They can see where they're going, and they're still stumbling. He's using this metaphor because you have rejected knowledge. God is saying, I have given you my word. I have given you the things that you need to do. Yet even though I've done all these things, you reject me. So you have the knowledge. And a lot of us will think, oh yeah, well, we read the Bible. Do you really have the knowledge that you need? Or are you just kind of reading it? I read yesterday, I read from chapter 4 all the way to chapter 14. Literally, we're going to say that if I could do it all today, I would do it all today. Because God is going to continue from chapter 4 all the way to 13 with the exact same language. Don't you think?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
For those of you all that have read ahead. So we're going to go over this, over it, and over it. There's a few things to bring out, but literally, I wanted to go, okay, I kind of got Hosea, but I really don't. When I sit down and I really start studying, it's a whole different ballgame. The knowledge that's in God's Word is hard to take quickly without studying, in my personal opinion. And hopefully you found that within this class.
So the word Hosea, which means salvation, can you, without, with the salvation, must come the knowledge.
You have to have the knowledge in order to have the salvation.
Yeah, that's what I mean, he's saying, basically, because you're being destroyed because of the lack. So on a spiritual level, you can see that as a destruction of the soul from lack of knowledge, which means there's no salvation. I'm just, you know,
he's saying, I've given you all the tools. There's one chair right there. But he's saying, I have given you all that you need. You have rejected it, or you think that you've already got all that you need, so therefore you reject it.
Mm-hmm.
And it shouldn't be that way. I mean, but because of lack, and you see this over and over again. I don't think I wrote those down. You see it over and over again in the Bible that God says because of not the lack of knowledge, they are lost. The people are lost. And the fear of God is the beginning of understanding, the beginning of knowledge. Verse 7, the more they multiply, they sinned against me. I will change their glory into shame. They feed on the sin of my people and direct their desire. I think I just skipped over something. Because you have rejected knowledge, let's go back to 6. My people are destroyed for lack of knowledge. Because you have rejected knowledge, I also will reject you from being my priest. Since you have forgotten the law of your God, I also will forget your children. For the more they multiplied, the more they sinned against me. I will change their glory into shame. They feed on the sin of my people and direct their desire toward their iniquity. And it will be like people, like priests. So I will punish them for their ways and repay them for their deeds. And they will eat, but not have enough. They will play the harlot, but not increase, because they have stopped giving heed to the Lord. Let's stop right there for just a second. God is saying, remember that the northern kingdom was very rich at this time. Economically prosperous. They were living without wars. Sounds very much like us right now. I mean, they're living in a time of prosperity. Everything that they want is at their fingertips. And God is saying, where did that come from? Well, that came from me. But as you turn away from my word, as you turn away from studying and the knowledge and all that, at some point, I'm going to turn away from you. So all that you have, that you think that you have done because you are so great, I'm going to take away from you. Actually, there's going to be a place here, and we'll get to it in a few minutes, where he equates them with cattle and sheep. And, you know, a cow can be out in the merch space. A cow can be out in the field and be in pretty good shape, right? There's not a whole lot of predators that are going to take down a cow for the most part. Now, let's put a lamb, and that's what...
Unless it's a cougar or a bear.
Unless it's a bear. But you put a lamb out there, a whole lot of things can take down a bear. I mean, can take down a lamb if they want to. So therefore, lamb normally have shepherds around them. And if one goes away and they're away from the flock, then the shepherd goes and brings them back in so that they have more bulk and that kind of stuff. And God equates that. He's saying, at some point, I'm going to quit being your shepherd. And I'm going to let you, in your infinite wisdom, wander like a little lost lamb. And you're going to be prey to all these different things that are going to come against you. And you have no defense. Because right now, God is your defense. God, whether we know it or not, is watching over us. God is continuously taking care of us. And he's asking us to increase in the knowledge of him and increase that relationship. Not by going to church. Not by just reading his Bible. But by having an intimate relationship with him. That's what our goal should be is that we would be in relationship with God. He has called us as His bride. He has called us to be in relationship. And when we find other things more important than being with Him and studying His Word, then He sees that as adultery. He sees that as, you know, whether it's your work or your family or your friends or a ball game or whatever it is. I mean, God sees that as you walking away from Him because He wants to be in relationship with you. Questions, comments? Verse 11, harlotry, wine, new wine take away the understanding. My people consult their wooden idol, and their diviner's wand informs them. For the spirit of harlotry has led them astray, and they have played the harlot, departing from their God. They offer sacrifices on the tops of the mountains and burn incense in the hills under oak, poplar, and I don't know how to say that, another tree.
What is that?
I think it's another tree because it's saying oak and poplar and terebinth. I didn't look it up. Thank you. See, and I didn't decipher all this today, but I just looked at that and went, it's going to be another tree. Because their shade is pleasant, therefore your daughters play the harlot and your brides commit adultery. I will not punish your daughters when they play the harlot or your brides when they commit adultery. For the men themselves go apart with harlots and offer sacrifices with temple prostitutes. So the people without understanding are ruined. Y'all realize this at this time. One of the real allures to being a pagan worship is, well, I'm going to go down to the Methodist church, or I'm going to go down to the synagogue and be a Jewish person, or I'm going to go over to the pagan place, and they have temple prostitutes, and in order to be a good worshiper, I have to be with the temple prostitute. So they would go and have sex and have orgies in these temples, and that was part of the fertility rites and that type of thing. So, you know, one is I'm going to follow after God. The other is we're going to have an orgy down at the community center, you know, so you can see how this might have been appealing at that particular point.
I started to understand when I was growing up, Catholics had a big community center in front of our house, and every Wednesday night, you couldn't get a car in there. We found out they were serving kegs of beer.
I wasn't sure where you were going with that. I mean, I just came off a tip of prostitution. You said, now I understand what was happening to the church of prostitution.
Hey, prostitutes coming off more.
I was thinking, wow, I'm not sure whether we need to shut this down now before it goes all the way. Just let it continue. Okay, let's continue on. Though you, Israel, play the harlot, do not let Judah become guilty. See, now he's separating them again, so you don't get confused. Israel is the northern tribe, Judah is the southern tribe. And it says, though you, Israel, play the harlot, do not let Judah become guilty. Also, do not go to Gilgal. Now, I propped this out, because at one time, Gilgal was a place where prophets were trained under Elijah and Elisha. You'd remember that in 2 Kings. But in Hosea's day, it became a center of false worship. There is no city actually named Beth-Haven. Hosea is twisting the name of the city of Bethel, meaning house of God, into a more fitting name, Beth-Haven, meaning house of deceit. Bethel was the southern, but they would have understood this. You know, it's making fun, basically. Bethel was the southern center of the calf worship established by Jeroboam the First. Okay, let's continue on. Verse 16, since Israel is stubborn, like a stubborn heifer, can the Lord now pasture them like a lamb in a large field? So this is the thing that I mentioned to you just a moment. Ephraim is joined to idols, let him alone. Their liquor are gone. They play the harlot continually. Their rulers dearly love shame. The wind wraps them in its wings, and they will be ashamed because of their sacrifices. Any questions or comments?
The lamb that will be in a large place, this will be them going into captivity.
Well, what he's trying to do is
the land of the heathen.
He is saying, I'm going to turn you loose. Mm-hmm. You're under my protection now. Yes, they're going to go into captivity, both the northern and the southern. But he's going to take his hand of protection away from them. So they're going to be like a lamb in a large field, no longer under protection, no longer having a shepherd. But if you want to wander, go ahead, wander. See how that works for you. Right now, you've got it made. You're protected. You're cared for. You get all your materials needs met. But if you want to wander and do your own thing, God's saying, at some point I'm going to take my hand off of you and let you do what you want to.
Steal his land.
Uh-huh. And he's going to show that here too. He's going to tell Israel, you're gone. Just forget it. And we see that. The northern tribes are gone. They're assimilated into the Assyrian population, and they're gone. They're the lost tribes of Israel. But he never takes his hand off Judah because he had made a promise, and God always keeps his promise that the Savior will come from the line of David. And he can't get rid of the line of David and still have the Savior come from the line of David. So he has to protect Judah. Now, he reprimands them, obviously, with Babylonian captivity. But you're going to see here he also says they are going to reap the harvest when they come back, because it's going to come back to them. You'll see that here in just a minute, if we get to 6. Hear this, O priest. Give heed, O house of Israel. Listen, O house of the king, for the judgment applies to you. For you have been a snare in Mizpah, and a net spread out in Tabor. And the revolters have gone deep in depravity, but I will chasten all of them. I know Ephraim and Israel is not hidden from me. For now, O Ephraim, you have played the harlot. Israel has denied itself. Their deeds will not allow them to return to their God, for the spirit of harlotry is within them, and they do not know the Lord. Verse 5, moreover, the pride of Israel testifies against them, and Israel and Ephraim stumble in their iniquity. Judah also has stumbled with them. They will go with their flocks and herds to seek the Lord, but they will not find him. He has withdrawn from them. This is what I was telling you a few minutes ago. He's going to withdraw from them and allow the Assyrian army to come in and take them over. Verse 7, they have dealt treacherously against the Lord, for they have borne illegitimate children. Now the new moon will devour them with their land. Blow the horn in guilt and Gibeah. Is that right? The trumpet in Ramah, sound the alarm in Beth Haven. Behind you, Benjamin, Ephraim will become a desolation in the day of rebuke. Among the tribes of Israel, I declare what is sure. The princes of Judah have become like those who move a boundary. Now, I want you to stop right here and realize this, because when I'm reading this over and I'm just reading it, and I'm telling you, it's he's going to go on like this for all the chapters. But notice this, the prince, he switches from all that he's saying about Israel, and then he switches back to Judah. And he says, the princes of Judah have become like those who move a boundary. Well, what does that mean? You're a cheater. The people of Judah, his people, the southern kingdom, are the people who, given the opportunity, they cheat you. Now, he's been talking about all the bad things that Israel does, but he's saying the princes of Judah have become like those who move a boundary. On them I will pour out my wrath like water. So they're going to get their portion in this also, because they are just as deceptive as the people of the north. Ephraim is oppressed, crushed in judgment, because he was determined to follow man's command, not God's command, but man's command. How do we look in the eyes of man, not in the eyes of God? Therefore, I am like a moth to Ephraim, and like rottenness to the house of Judah. When Ephraim saw his sickness and Judah his wound, then Ephraim went to Assyria and sent to King Jareb. But he was unable to heal you or to cure you of your wound. For I will be like a lion to Ephraim, like a young lion to the house of Judah. I will tear to pieces and go away. I will carry away, and there will be none to deliver. I will go away and return to my place until they acknowledge their guilt and seek my face. In their affliction, they will earnestly seek me. So he's saying, I'm going to lead them to their own selves, and I'm actually going to come against them like a lion. And I've told this story before. We did a story up in East Tennessee on a place that keeps lions and tigers. You can't visit. Nobody can go. It's just they keep them until they die. It's kind of like the elephant sanctuary. They've been in, you know, in circuses and different things. And we're riding around and doing the story, and most of them, just like looking at them in the zoo, you know, the tigers and stuff. I said, what's worse, a tiger or a lion? They said, oh, a lion. Lion is just vicious. He will come at you, and there's no turning back. A tiger might play. He might get vicious, but he might play with you. He might do all this kinds of stuff. And as we're riding around, they've got, I don't know, 20-foot cages around them. And this lion, as we're riding in the golf cart coming by, he comes off the top of the hill and charges and dives into this and almost made me wet my pants. I mean, I have never seen, and I'll never forget, he was so ferocious and he roared as he came. And I thought, this is frightening. I mean, and every time I read something about how fearsome a lion is, I think of this lion. It just has a picture in my head. Just unbelievable. So God is taking His hand of protection off them and letting them know that. Do you have a question, comment?
I just think about it. He's talking about the following the rules of man or the laws of man. I guess there's still, I couldn't help but the time of Jesus, when Jesus would always get on to the Pharisees and scribes because they were changing God's law, or they had changed God, and these are the same folks, mm-hmm. because Christ talks about a generation. Talks to the priests and scribes in Matthew 23. It talks about a generation going way back when you killed the prophets and you changed my word. I just couldn't have a faith.
And he's saying here, he's indicting the priests as much as he is the people, saying, you are the ones that are supposed to be leading, and you're not.
Right.
And because you're not, I'm going to take my hands of protection off of everyone, because they are going astray because you are not leading them right. But they also have the responsibility, no matter who their priest is, no matter who their pastor is, they have the responsibility to know who I am. So if you come to this church, and I've said this 1,000 times, if you come here and then tomorrow you find out I've done something really horrible, and how could Larry ever do such a thing? And I'm just going to leave the church because he's such a horrible person and no one could ever, you know, live up to being the person that they should, then you're following me wrong. Wrong, 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 wrong. You need to make a relationship with God. I'm here to facilitate. I'm here to help us all learn. Same thing with a pastor. I know we've seen pastors fail before and fall before. And if that makes you fall and fall away from God and say, oh, all those people that are religious are just a bunch of hypocrites, then you've got the wrong relationship. You're counting on man to feed you rather than you creating that own relationship with God. Let's go to chapter 6. Come, let us return to the Lord, for He has torn us, but He will heal us. He has wounded us, but He will bandage us. This is Hosea now saying, you know, let's all go back. He will revive us after 2 days, and He will raise us up on the third day that we may live before Him. Do you see a shadow or a type of Christ in that?
Mm-hmm.
On the second day we will go down, on the third day He will raise us up. My Bible has little stars beside where it's prophetic and talks about Jesus. It doesn't have a star here, but how could you not see the parallel? Verse 3. So let us know, let us press on to know the Lord. His going forth is as certain as the dawn, and He will come to us like the rain, like the spring rain watering the earth. What shall I do? I wonder if that's the one that I think that is. Who's got where it says latter and former rain to the earth? Is that?
Yeah.
Read that. Read verse 3 for me, please.
Whoever's got it. We call on to know the Lord. His going forth is prepared as the morning, and He shall come unto us as the rain, as the latter and former rain unto the earth.
The latter and the former rain. That's what I was more familiar with when I was studying, and I had actually marked this, and I'm not cross-referencing since I'm going through so much. Clark, which is a commentator, on the latter and former rain to the earth, the first to prepare the earth for seed, this fell in the autumn, the second to prepare the full ear for the harvest, this fell in the spring. Now this is from Spurgeon. Notice again that it is a repeated gift. He shall give the former rain and the latter rain. If you had grace once, the Lord has more for you. Did you have happy times when whoever your last pastor, so-and-so, was your pastor? Well, he is now dead. But God is not. Were you very much delighted when you used to sit in such and such a church in years gone by? And have you moved into the country now? Yes, but God has not moved. He is in the country as well as the town. You tell me you had such happy times when you were young. Yes, but God is neither younger nor older. Go to Him, for He is the same yesterday, today, and forever. Do you suppose that because He gave you the former rain, He has emptied the bottles of heaven? So if you were happy in Christ before and somehow that has fallen away and you have lost some of that mountaintop experience or that glamour that you had at one point, that really close relationship, God hasn't stopped giving grace. God hasn't stopped blessing you. But it's up to us to be in relationship with Him and to not just say, oh, I'm coming to church, but God judges us by the things we do. We can say all we want to say, but the things that we do towards Him, the things we do for Him, when we act, when God or when Jesus said, you'll know my people by the things that they do, God knows us by our heart, but also by our actions, by the things that we do that reflect God's or Christ's love in us. Questions or comments?
Well, He changes our heart.
He does.
And then we do from the change.
But we don't stay there. And that's the same thing with Israel. Israel and Judah were His people, mm-hmm. but they didn't stay.
Yeah. But he blinded them more, as it says in Romans 11.
Right.
He took it away from them. If you want me to blind you, I'm going to blind you.
Right.
I'm fixing to give it to my election.
Right.
So and that's what.
But that's the same thing that we're living with right now. It's the same thing that they're going through.
Mm-hmm.
Verse 4. What shall I do with you, O Ephraim? And what shall I do with you, O Judah? For your loyalty is like a morning cloud and like the dew which goes away early. Now, if you guys are Facebook people, those of you that are, I took a picture this morning. Lisa was up, which is a rarity before the sun comes up. But she was, and she was upstairs with me, and I was studying, and she was going over some of her work. And I looked up, and there was just this gorgeous sunrise. I mean, it was just striking. And so we said, oh, well, let's go outside on the deck and take a look at the sunrise and see how pretty it is and just enjoy God's glory. And Lisa went and got a cup of coffee, and I went outside. I took a picture, and by the time she got back, it had already diminished. I mean, it was like 30 seconds. It might have been a minute, and it was just gone. And and I had stopped right where I had stopped before, and when I came back, the next verse that I read was, what shall I do with you, O Ephraim? What shall I do with you, O Judah? For your loyalty is like a morning cloud, and like the dew which goes away early. And I went, okay. And I'm a very visual learner, and so God kind of shows me, and then when I sat back down and read that, I went, whew. And, you know, someone said, you're probably not... I mean, God is talking to you, and I wanted to write back, God is always talking to me, but sometimes He just bashes me over the head, which is very telling to me. Am I Ephraim? Am I Judah? Is my loyalty and my faithfulness as passing that quick? I mean, I'm coming into church, and I'm studying and doing all these godly things and doing this things to try to get closer to God, and where am I going to be tomorrow? Am I still going to be in that relationship, or am I going to walk away? Am I not going to be as faithful as I should be? And the answer to that is probably yes. So, moving on. Verse 5. Therefore, I have hewn them in pieces by the prophets. I have slain them by the words of my mouth, and the judgments on you are like the light that goes forth, for I delight in loyalty rather than sacrifice, and in the knowledge of God rather than burnt offerings. But like Adam, they have transgressed the covenant. They have dealt treacherously against me. Gilead is a city of wrongdoers, tracked with bloody footprints. As the raiders wait for a man, so the band of priests murder on their way to Shechem. Surely they have committed crime. In the house of Israel, I have seen a horrible thing. Ephraim's harlotry is there. Israel has defiled itself. Also, O Judah, there is a harvest appointed for you when I restore the fortunes of my people. That last is a promise that although the northern kingdom is going to go away, O Judah, there is a harvest appointed for you when I restore the fortunes of my people, when I bring you back after the Babylonian captivity and I bring you back into the land, there will be a harvest to be had there in the New Jerusalem.
Mm-hmm.
Questions or comments?
He makes that point again the second time about Gilead.
He harps on it.
He harps on it, doesn't he?
The substitution of other gods for him.
Mm-hmm.
And those substitutions can be, in our day, money, family, pride, fame, fortune. Name your thing that draws you away from God. Name that thing that, whether it's whatever it is. You know what your thing is that draws you away from God. And that thing is an idol that you are having adulterous relations with as opposed to being in a faithful relationship with God.
I think he's telling us too, to pay attention to doctrine.
Doctrine.
Because doctrine can pull you away from God. You think it's pulling you toward God.
Right. I thought you were saying we needed more doctrine.
No, I'm going to go, no. No, false doctrine.
You know, right. I need more doctrine.
No.
Well, I'm going to let you guys go on that. Please, in the next few weeks, read 2, 3, 4 chapters, or if you get a chance, go ahead and read the whole thing. Like I said, it took me about 20 minutes to read all of Hosea. But you're gonna read it and just kind of fall asleep. Because I did, and kept waking up going, it's the same thing over and over again. But as we look into it, and hopefully you will look into it, we're going to find some places where God is specifically talking, not only to Judah and to Israel, but also to us. Thank y'all.